cold open. Here's what nobody's talking about in those glossy ESG marketing brochures. While multilateral development banks are quietly panicking about fossil fuel legal liability this week, the world's biggest commercial banks are sitting on $3.8 trillion in fossil fuel financing since 2016. That's not a typo. Nearly $4 trillion. And here's the kicker. Most of these institutions have no idea what their actual exposure looks like when the music stops. They're flying blind into what could be the biggest financial reckoning since the mortgage crisis. The question isn't whether this house of cards falls down. The question is, who's left holding the bag when it does? Welcome back to Edge Capital Insights. I'm Sloan. Today, we're going deep on climate risk disclosure in finance and why the smartest money in the room is starting to sweat. The multilateral development banks are having what we might charitably call a moment of clarity. These are the institutions that are supposed to be financing global development. The World Bank, the Asian Development Bank, the usual suspects. And this week, they're waking up to the reality that their fossil fuel portfolios aren't just politically inconvenient anymore. They're potentially legally toxic. When the development banks start getting nervous about liability, that's your canary in the coal mine for the entire financial system. Let's establish the playing field here, because the scale of this thing is breathtaking. We're talking about $40 trillion in ESG-focused assets under management globally. $40 trillion. For context, that's larger than the entire gross domestic product of the United States and China combined. This isn't some boutique investment trend anymore. This is the mainstream. But here's where it gets interesting. While all that money is flowing into supposedly sustainable investments, the traditional banking sector has been doubling down on fossil fuels, like it's 1999, since the Paris Agreement was signed in 2015. You know, that little document where nearly every country on Earth promised to limit global warming, the world's 60 largest banks have provided $3.8 trillion in financing to fossil fuel companies. Not $3.8 billion, trillion, with a T. JP Morgan Chase leads the pack with over $400 billion in fossil fuel financing since Paris. Bank of America, Citi, Wells Fargo, they're all in the club. These aren't rogue actors. These are the institutions that define global capital flows. They're the ones your pension fund probably has money with. They're the ones underwriting the mortgages and business loans that make the economy function. The Rainforest Action Network tracks this data religiously, and their latest report reads like a horror story for anyone who thought the financial system was actually taking climate risk seriously. Coal financing alone has totaled over $300 billion since Paris. Pipeline projects, oil and gas expansion, offshore drilling, it's all there, meticulously documented, completely legal, and potentially catastrophic. Now, the banks will tell you they're managing their risk. They have climate teams now. They publish sustainability reports. They've signed on to various climate commitments. But here's what they're not telling you in those glossy annual reports. Most of them have no idea what their actual exposure looks like in a world where fossil fuel assets become stranded. These are the folks who literally invented the term stranded assets. Estimates that banking sector exposure to fossil fuel-related risks could lead to losses of up to $1.6 trillion by 2050. That's roughly 15% of the sector's total assets. For comparison, the subprime mortgage crisis that nearly collapsed the global financial system involved losses of around $700 billion in the U.S. alone. Mark Carney, the former governor of the Bank of England, has been sounding the alarm on this for years. Back when he was still at the Bank of England, he warned about a climate Minsky moment, a sudden collapse in asset prices as investors wake up to climate risks all at once. The man who helped steer the UK through the 2008 financial crisis is telling us that climate risk could be worse. And yet, here we are with banks still writing checks to fossil fuel companies like climate change is just a theory. The Bank of England's own stress tests suggest that UK banks could face losses of up to 10% of their capital by 2050 from climate-related risks. The European Central Bank is running similar scenarios and coming up with similar numbers. These aren't environmental activists with calculators. These are central bankers with access to the actual books, but the real kicker is in the legal risk category. This is where the multilateral development banks are having their come to Jesus moment this week. The legal landscape around fossil fuel financing is shifting faster than most institutions can adapt. We're seeing successful climate litigation against governments and corporations around the world. The Netherlands was ordered by its own courts to cut emissions faster. ExxonMobil is facing dozens of climate lawsuits. Shell was ordered by a Dutch court to cut its emissions by 45%. Now imagine you're a bank that financed these projects. Imagine you underwrote the bonds for a coal plant that's now being shuttered ahead of schedule due to regulatory pressure. Imagine you provided the credit facility for an oil company that's facing billions in climate damages. The legal theories are evolving, but the direction is clear. If you finance the problem, you might be liable for the solution. Here's the bull case, and I'm going to steelman this because the sustainability crowd isn't entirely wrong. Banks that get ahead of climate risk disclosure might actually come out ahead. The logic is straightforward. If climate transition is inevitable, and the policy momentum suggests it is, then the institutions that position themselves correctly will capture disproportionate value. Look at the numbers on ESG investing. $40 trillion in assets under management globally, growing at roughly 15% annually. That's faster than traditional asset management, faster than GDP growth, faster than almost any other category of financial assets. BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager, has made ESG central to its investment philosophy. Larry Fink's annual letter to CEOs has become required reading precisely because he controls nearly $10 trillion in assets. The Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures has over 4,000 supporters now, including virtually every major financial institution globally. When JPMorgan Chase, Bank of America, and Goldman Sachs all sign onto the same disclosure framework, that's not virtue signaling, that's risk management at the institutional level. European banks are already demonstrating what this looks like in practice. BNP Paribas has committed to ending financing for shale oil and gas projects. Deutsche Bank has pledged to be carbon neutral by 2050. These aren't feel-good press releases. These are strategic positioning moves by institutions that see the writing on the wall. The regulatory environment is creating a clear first mover advantage. The European Union's taxonomy for sustainable activities is becoming the global standard. The Securities and Exchange Commission is moving toward mandatory climate disclosure for public companies. Central banks from London to Tokyo are incorporating climate risk into their stress testing frameworks. Banks that build robust climate risk management capabilities now will be better positioned when regulators start requiring it. They'll be better positioned when investors start demanding it. They'll be better positioned when corporate clients start needing it. The institutions that wait are going to find themselves playing catch-up in a market that moves faster every year. The CDP reports that 85% of the world's largest companies are now disclosing climate-related risks, up from 63% just 5 years ago. That's not because they suddenly discovered environmental consciousness. That's because their banks, their insurers, their investors, and their customers are demanding transparency. But here's what the bulls are missing, and this is where we need to get skeptical fast. The bear case isn't just about transition costs. It's about the fundamental stability of the financial system in a world where 40 years of fossil fuel investments suddenly become worthless. Let's start with the math. $3.8 trillion in fossil fuel financing since Paris. That's not money that's already been written off. That's money that's currently on bank balance sheets. As performing assets, those loans are generating interest income. Those bonds are paying coupons. Those credit facilities are producing fee revenue. The entire business model depends on these assets continuing to perform. Now imagine a scenario where carbon pricing becomes serious globally. Not the token systems we have now, but actual carbon prices that reflect the true cost of emissions. The International Monetary Fund estimates that carbon prices would need to reach at least $75 per ton by 2030 to meet Paris Agreement goals. Currently, most carbon pricing systems are under $30 per ton. At $75 per ton, entire categories of fossil fuel projects become economically unviable overnight. Coal plants, oil sands projects, offshore drilling in marginal fields. The economics just don't work. And if the economics don't work, the companies can't service their debt. And if the companies can't service their debt, the banks take losses. The Harvard Business School did a fascinating study on this. They modeled what happens to bank portfolios under different carbon pricing scenarios. At $50 per ton carbon pricing, U.S. banks face potential losses of around $200 billion. At $100 per ton, the losses approach $500 billion. These aren't gradual write-downs over decades. These are sudden revaluations that happen as soon as the policy environment shifts. But the real historical parallel here isn't the 2008 financial crisis. It's the tobacco settlement of the 1990s. The tobacco companies knew their products caused cancer for decades before they admitted it publicly. When the truth finally came out, the legal and financial reckoning was swift and brutal. The major tobacco companies paid out over $200 billion in settlement agreements. Several went bankrupt. The entire industry was restructured. Now apply that template to fossil fuels. ExxonMobil's own scientists were modeling climate change accurately in the 1970s, while the company publicly disputed the science for decades. Internal documents from major oil companies show they understood the risks of their products long before they acknowledged them. The legal theory is already being tested in courts around the world. If you knew your product caused harm and you concealed that knowledge, you're liable for damages. The difference between tobacco and fossil fuels is scale. Tobacco was a large industry, but it wasn't systemically important to the financial sector. Fossil fuels are woven into the fabric of the global banking system. When the tobacco reckoning came, it didn't threaten financial stability. When the fossil fuel reckoning comes, and the legal momentum suggests it's when, not if, we're talking about potential systemic risk. The European Central Bank ran a stress test on this scenario. They modeled what happens if climate litigation leads to sudden repricing of fossil fuel assets across the banking sector. The results are classified, but sources familiar with the analysis describe it as concerning for financial stability. That central bankers speak for holy shit, this could be really bad. Morgan Stanley's climate team published research earlier this year suggesting that stranded asset risk could trigger the next financial crisis. Not might trigger, could trigger. These are the same analysts who correctly predicted the subprime mortgage crisis 3 years before it happened. So what does this mean for you sitting in your car listening to this or at your desk trying to figure out where to put your money? Let's walk through the stakeholders because the implications are different depending on where you sit. If you're a retail investor, the first thing to understand is that your exposure to this risk is probably larger than you think. Your 401k almost certainly includes bank stocks. Your pension fund definitely includes bank stocks. Your index funds are loaded with financial sector exposure. When people talk about systemic risk, they mean risk that touches everyone, whether you think you're invested in fossil fuels or not. The smart retail money is already moving. ESG funds have seen net inflows of over $100 billion annually for the past 3 years. But here's the dirty secret. Most ESG funds still own bank stocks, and most banks are still heavily exposed to fossil fuel financing. Buying an ESG fund doesn't necessarily protect you from climate risk if that fund owns JPMorgan Chase or Bank of America. What should you actually do about this? First, look at your bank stock exposure across all your accounts. If you own financial sector ETFs, you're probably overexposed to climate risk. Consider rotating into banks that are genuinely leading on climate risk management, not just talking about it. BNP Paribas, ING, some of the European institutions that have made binding commitments to exit fossil fuel financing. Second, if you're holding individual bank stocks, dig into their disclosure, not their sustainability marketing materials, their actual financial filings. Look for quantitative analysis of climate risk exposure. Look for scenario analysis that models different carbon pricing outcomes. Most banks aren't doing this analysis yet, which should tell you something about how seriously they're taking the risk. For institutional investors, and I know you're listening, the calculus is more complex, but the stakes are higher. If you're managing pension assets or endowment funds, you have fiduciary duties that extend decades into the future. Climate risk isn't a nice-to-have consideration anymore. It's a fundamental risk management issue. The institutional smart money is already repositioning. Norway's government pension fund, the world's largest sovereign wealth fund, has divested from dozens of fossil fuel companies and is pushing for climate risk disclosure across its entire portfolio. CalPERS, the largest public pension fund in the U.S., is demanding climate risk analysis from every investment manager it works with. But here's what the institutions are really worried about. Liability. If climate risk causes significant losses in pension portfolios and fund managers can be shown to have ignored available information about that risk, the legal exposure could be enormous. We're already seeing the first climate-related fiduciary duty lawsuits being filed. The legal theory is straightforward. If you had a duty to manage risk and you ignored a known quantifiable risk, you're liable for the losses. The companies themselves, the banks, are in the most interesting position. They know this is coming. The smart ones are already repositioning. Goldman Sachs announced a $750 billion commitment to sustainable finance. JP Morgan Chase committed $1 trillion. These aren't marketing stunts. These are strategic pivots by institutions that see the writing on the wall. But here's what they're not telling you. Most of these commitments are additions to their existing portfolios, not replacements for fossil fuel financing. JP Morgan can commit $1 trillion to sustainable finance and still be the world's largest fossil fuel financier. The math doesn't add up unless they're planning to dramatically expand their balance sheets, which seems unlikely in the current regulatory environment. The banks that are genuinely getting ahead of this are the ones making hard commitments to exit fossil fuel financing entirely. Not by 2050, not with loopholes for existing commitments. Now, those are the institutions that are taking climate risk seriously as a business issue, not just a public relations challenge. For regulators, the picture is becoming clearer by the day. Central banks around the world are incorporating climate risk into their supervisory frameworks. The Bank of England requires climate stress testing. The European Central Bank is doing the same. The Federal Reserve is moving in that direction despite political resistance. But regulatory response typically lags market reality by years or decades. By the time regulators require comprehensive climate risk disclosure, the institutions that haven't prepared will be scrambling to catch up. The regulatory environment is creating a clear advantage for early movers and a clear disadvantage for laggards. The geopolitical implications are also worth considering. Climate risk is reshaping global capital flows. Money is moving away from fossil fuel-dependent economies and toward clean energy leaders. Countries like Saudi Arabia and Russia, whose economies depend on oil exports, are facing potential balance of payments crises if the transition accelerates. That creates currency risk, sovereign debt risk, and broader emerging market risk that flows back through the global banking system. China presents a particularly interesting case study. The country is simultaneously the world's largest coal consumer and the world's largest investor in renewable energy. Chinese banks are heavily exposed to both sides of the climate transition. How that tension resolves will have enormous implications for global financial stability. But let's get practical about what you should actually do with this information right now, today, when you finish listening to this episode. If you're an individual investor, audit your climate risk exposure across all your accounts. Look at your bank stock holdings. Look at your sector allocations. Consider whether your portfolio is positioned for a world where climate risk becomes systematic risk. If you're an institutional investor, demand climate risk analysis from your investment managers. Not just ESG screening, actual quantitative analysis of climate transition scenarios. Push for disclosure. Push for stress testing. The managers who can't or won't provide this analysis are the ones you should be worried about. If you work at a bank, start asking hard questions about your institution's fossil fuel exposure, not whether you have climate commitments, but whether you have quantitative analysis of different climate scenarios and how they impact your balance sheet. The institutions that are doing this analysis seriously are the ones that will survive the transition. The ones that aren't are the ones that will become cautionary tales. And here's the most important thing. This isn't a distant future risk anymore. The multilateral development banks are having their climate risk awakening right now this week. The policy environment is shifting faster than most institutions can adapt. The legal environment is evolving in real time. The financial markets are repricing climate risk continuously. The question isn't whether climate risk will reshape the financial system. The question is whether you'll be positioned correctly when it happens. The institutions that are getting ahead of this transition will capture enormous value. The institutions that are behind the curve will face enormous losses. There's not much middle ground in a systemic transition. Looking at the data, looking at the policy momentum, looking at the legal trends, my prediction is straightforward. Within 5 years, fossil fuel financing will be treated by financial markets the way tobacco financing is treated today. Possible, but expensive, heavily scrutinized, and available only from specialized institutions willing to accept the reputational and financial risks. The banks that recognize this reality and position themselves accordingly will thrive. The banks that fight this reality will struggle. And the investors who understand which category their institutions fall into will make better decisions with their money. That's Edge Capital Insights for today. I'm Sloan. Stay sharp, stay skeptical.